Newman University supports WHYY and encourages listeners to discover how a master's degree in pastoral clinical mental health counseling can help prepare adults for professional licensure and roles in community counseling. Designed to integrate psychology and spirituality, this ecumenical program is open to people of all faith traditions. There's an information session on June 3rd at Newman's campus in Delaware County. Details are available at newman.edu.
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, we'll visit a Germantown salon catering to inner and outer beauty. First, a bill being considered by New Jersey lawmakers requires breast milk banks to be licensed by the State Department of Health. WHYY's Phil Gregory explains.
Assemblywoman Pamela Lampett is concerned that unregulated shared breast milk might not be stored at the proper temperature.
Bacteria can come into the breast milk, and when an infant is then receiving breast milk that has a high content of bacteria, it can cause severe problems and sometimes death.
Lampett's bill would require screening of the milk and would set standards for processing and storage. Ellen Maughan with the New Jersey Breastfeeding Coalition says the measure could discourage milk banks from opening in New Jersey.
It does stand to increase costs a bit on a commodity that's really needed for sick babies and it's already pretty expensive and is not always covered by insurance.
There are 15 nonprofit breast milk banks in other states that provide supplies to New Jersey hospitals. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Phil Gregory, WHYY News.
On Saturday night, a 26-year-old Philadelphia filmmaker was struck and killed while riding his bike along Girard Avenue. Police are investigating the incident and have not announced charges against the driver. WHYY's Bobby Allen offers this remembrance of Vijay Mohan, or Jay as many knew him.
Jay never blended in with a crowd. His former professor at Temple remembers teaching a 200-person class where most were zoned out. But Jay was alert. And he smiled the whole time.
Very earnest, very warm, and had the ability to make people feel really comfortable, and then he could ask the really tough questions.
After he graduated, Professor Ria Tajiri became a friend and mentor. They swapped music and movie recommendations, and he helped her move three times. Jay bounced around a lot himself. Born in Chicago, he moved to India when his father became ill, but then came back to the U.S. to study film at Temple.
And he grew up in some very rough neighborhoods. You know, he lived for 26 years, he lived the life of somebody who was 45. he overcame that.
His girlfriend, Mayori Carmel Holmes, met him at his work at Philly Cam, which runs the city's public access channel.
I just, saw this really cute guy, and he was very intense, energy, and was really, really kind to me.
On Saturday night, he and Holmes went to see the film While We're Young at the Ritz, and after, they debated its merits. Then he took off biking home.
Actually, the last thing he said to me was, "See you tomorrow," and it was a little strange.
Police say he was biking west on Girard a little after midnight when a Buick Roadmaster struck him. He wasn't wearing a helmet.
There are a number of people who contacted me who said they saw the accident and it was just really an accident. It seemed like nobody was wrong. It didn't seem like Vijay or the driver were at fault, but it was just really, a freak accident.
It was the second bike fatality in Philly this year. City statistics show that cyclists are involved in around 700 accidents with motorists annually. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Looking to get away this summer? Astronomers have the jump on you, and that look is as far away as the Trained Telescope has ever been able to see. Let's take a peek with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, I'm looking. I can't quite bring this one into focus.
Yeah, you're going to have a difficult time with that because you need equipment, and boy, do you need equipment. And so here we are now, out at the very edge of the observable universe, very close to the edge of the observable universe, that of our universe that we can see, because these objects are so far away that the light from them is just now reaching us. And that distance of the edge of the observable universe is about 13.65 billion light years out.
This is about information coming to us from a very long time ago and a very distant place.
Right, and we're talking about discrete objects that we're seeing at the greatest distance we can possibly see.
So just what is it that's being seen?
Well, actually, we're talking about a galaxy here, and it's a very, very early galaxy. The idea being that here we're seeing one of the earliest galaxies ever observed at 13 billion light years away. When we see objects at that distance, we're seeing the earliest objects that ever formed in the universe. And of course, these objects, as we discover and observe them, become data points against which we can now measure the truth of the models that we've built to help explain how the universe came into existence.
Does this galaxy still exist?
Wow, what a great question. And it has to do with the star production in the galaxy. So as we continue to look at it and gather more information, we can determine whether or not it has had stars in it that are still new. But we also have to remember that these objects are also rushing outward at a great rate of speed, at some significant percentage of the speed of light. So we see it today where it was 13 billion years ago.
Turn it around. Potentially sentient creatures out at that point training their lens on us would have seen nothing.
They would have seen nothing because we haven't come into existence yet. So we still don't exist. Yet we're trying to see them even as we exist, but perhaps they don't exist anymore. Will they ever see us before their existence comes to an end? And will we ever see them before our existence comes to an end?
Let's bookmark this existential conversation for a moment and come all the way back to our solar system and watch a waterfall, as it were, except this one's going from the ground up.
Oh, yes, finally, something concrete to stand on. Here we're actually talking about one of the moons of the planet Saturn. The ringed planet Saturn, of course, has not only this fabulous ring system, but it also has a tremendous system of moons. And one of those moons, one that's about 313 miles in diameter, Enceladus, is known to have a liquid water ocean some 20 miles down beneath its ice crust surface. Now, Enceladus seems to contribute water vapor, if you will, to the E-ring of Saturn, the outermost ring of Saturn. And the observation shows that there are jets of water vapor, seemingly jets of water vapor, escaping from the moon itself. Further observation has shown us that instead of individual jets, more than likely we're probably seeing what are long, sinuous curtains of water vapor being blasted out of the moon along cracks in the icy surface. So with the water underneath, as this water escapes through the cracks, it comes into this extremely cold environment, and that, of course, solidifies the water vapor into ice crystals. And these are the ice crystals that not only fall on the surface, but also are contributed to the icy E-ring of Saturn.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. Taking a look at today's headlines, Pennsylvania Speaker of the House Mike Terzai announced a special election will be held August 4th to fill vacancies in districts, including one outside Chester. Delaware County Representative Joe Hackett, a Republican, resigned last month. He plans to return to police work, where he spent his career before being elected to the legislature. The party will select candidates for that special election. The Pennsylvania Senate has given its approval to four of Governor Tom Wolf's cabinet members, the first ones to pass the Republican-controlled chamber. Confirmed today are Adjutant General James Joseph, Economic and Community Development Secretary Dennis Davin, General Services Secretary Curtis Topper, and Transportation Secretary Leslie Richards. 16 other nominees await confirmation hearings or votes, with five slated for tomorrow, including the nomination of Pedro Cortez as Secretary of State, an office overseeing elections and more than two dozen professional boards. Cortez held that position in Governor Ed Rendell's administration. An historic Wilmington church is officially becoming part of Delaware's new National Historical Park. Senator Tom Carper joined the Reverend Patricia Downing today for the signing of a cooperative easement agreement that added the Old Swedes Church to that park. Partly cloudy, 81 degrees on Independence Mall, it's 6:15. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on WHYY. There's a chance of a stray shower overnight, low 66 degrees. Tomorrow, sunny and hot, Tuesday's high 88. Wednesday, sunny, breezy, cooler, high around 73 degrees. Still ahead, a new baker sees his one-man show rise to new heights.
I got my hands in the dough with no intention of starting a bakery or being a baker, just with the intention of learning how to make bread. But I was that guy who got his hands in the dough and just couldn't get it out.
The Business of Bread, as NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Eastern State Penitentiary Historic Site supports WHYY, featuring five new artist installations with new work from Ruth Scott Blackson, Jesse Crimes, Jess Perlitz, Emily Waters, and a collaboration with the Philadelphia Mural Arts Program. Visitors can also experience an audio tour narrated by actor Steve Buscemi and exhibits with new perspectives on today's criminal justice system. Open every day. Full schedule at easternstate.org.
On the next Fresh Air, astronomer Chris Impey tells us about our future in space, including the possibility of a space elevator.
The idea is basically you string a cable up into space to the point where it's suspended, like in an Indian rope trick, by the spinning force of the Earth.
Impey's new book is Beyond. Join us.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM. Arden Theatre Company presents Passion by composer and lyricist Stephen Sondheim. A tale of love and obsession, Passion won the Tony Award for Best Musical and boasts one of Sondheim's most lush and romantic scores. Set in 19th century Italy, Passion finds a handsome army captain pursued by a mysterious ailing woman. Opens May 21st. For tickets, 215-922-1122 or ardentheatre.org. The Arden Theatre Company supports WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. If you can't get an appointment at the Hollywood Beauty Salon in Germantown, the next best thing is to attend the opening of the documentary film of the same name this Thursday at the Kimmel Center in Philadelphia. Let's get a preview with the documentary filmmaker Glenn Holston, Rachel Hollywood Carr Timms, proprietor of the Hollywood Beauty Salon and psychiatric rehabilitation practitioner, and Darlene Holmes Malone. Darlene, Rachel, Glenn, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Couldn't be happier to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Hollywood Beauty Salon is located in the Germantown Recovery Community. This is a beauty salon that focuses on outer and, more importantly, inner beauty. Rachel, what was the idea for the salon?
Well, the idea came about, I guess, about 7 years ago. I was very interested in making the people in recovery at the members at the program appearance better. I've always liked fashion and beauty, and I felt like the members that I worked with at the recovery center, I just wanted them to look better, and I believed in them, and I felt like that they could. So we focused on personal hygiene, personal care skills, self-esteem, and I have some cosmetology background besides wanting to work in the mental health field. So I decided to use my skills to just encourage the women and men just to take better pride and care in themselves. And I started to notice that once people looked better on the outside, that it made them blossom into people that wanted to focus on the, you know, outer beauty, inner beauty. It made them have some confidence.
Most of the scenes do take place within the confines of the Germantown recovery community. It's a safe place, a safe to share feelings, a place where you won't be prejudged. How does one emerge from the safety of the center to the goal of an outside life?
Well, I would like to say they're brave for even coming there every day. I tell them just to wake up and come, to me, is a start in their recovery process. They work with recovery guys and music therapists, art therapists, get one-on-one individual. We have a growing art studio. They can take music. They can come to the beauty shop and get training on either personally or either outside. We have a vocational education program that works with OVR and helps people with Social Security and then go back to work. So we have a lot of things that restore and rehabilitate people back into the community. And one of the main reasons why, when I was asked to do the film, at first I said it was a little scary for me because I had no problems with talking to the members about things that I went through in my recovery journey to encourage them, but to tell the world. And then after I thought about it for a couple of days, I thought about how impactful that would be for people to get a human face on mental health challenges and being in drug and alcohol recovery. because unfortunately society has so much stigma and ignorance and hate towards people who have challenges. It's hard for people to even speak up and say, I have a problem, because they're afraid of being judged.
And the film early on depicts you inviting viewers into your home, and it's a long, hard climb, literally, and the viewer sees you walking up a narrow, creaky set of stairs. Let's listen.
It was like, these steps symbolized my life, long and hard to get up. And I was like, oh my God, I gotta walk up all these steps every day. So yeah, it was, you know, like one of my first apartments a couple years ago. So,
Glenn, you're an esteemed filmmaker, no stranger to WHYY PBS audiences with films like Thomas Akins and Heartland. You also have experience in this mental health field, more recently completing OC-87, the obsessive compulsive major depression bipolar Asperger's movie. What brought you to bring your lens to this specific project?
Well, I was actually hired to do a corporate video for NHS Human Services. They're the larger organization that runs the Germantown Recovery Community, in which the Hollywood Beauty Salon exists. And so I was there filming music therapy, art therapy, things that I had experienced before. And then near the end, the head of public relations said, would you like to see our beauty salon? And I said, sure, let me see the beauty salon. And they opened the door, and there was Rachel, a.k.a. Hollywood. And I said, I have to come back here. And that was the beginning of the film, because I heard Rachel's very, very wise talk about what goes on at the beauty salon. I remember you told me, you said, it's a good thing we're doing here. We have hope here. And I wanted to be a part of that. The thing that I loved about the project, 4 years ago, we started a workshop process. It was me and interested men and women. And together we discussed options of how we wanted to tell our stories. And then people sort of either drifted towards one form of storytelling or one form of story that they wanted told.
Darlene, among the many, many powerful portrayals in the film is when the camera turns to you and you tell your story through a series of Dear God conversations. Explain.
My Dear God conversations is what keeps me centered and focused. Through all the pain and abuse and everything I went through, that is who I leaned on.
Your trust in people was severely compromised based on how you were treated in and out of foster homes.
Yes.
And so you would speak to God.
Yes. I would just talk or pray or say Dear God, because it referred to a book way back that I read where it was Dear God, Me, Margaret. So I turned it into Dear God, It's Darlene.
And in this documentary, there's a casting call for a young Darlene. And so it's a powerful scene also where she verbatim is reciting the lines that you earlier spoke in a Dear God moment.
Yes.
What was that like for you to see a young version of yourself? And of course, in the film, you ask her what it's like to see a completed adult version of herself. What was that like?
It was very healing. Because it was me as an adult taking care of the younger child within.
It's a film about love. Yes. It's a film about growth. It's a film about transcending one's demons.
Yes.
It's a film about things that we all share. And that was my goal, is not to make a film about a person with schizophrenia or make a film about a person with bipolar disorder or a film about depression. Those are things that affect this particular population, affects many of us.
Yeah, these are universals and beautifully told. Congratulations to you all. Thanks for being here on Newsworks tonight.
Thank you.
Glenn Holston, documentary filmmaker. Rachel Hollywood Carr Timms, proprietor of the Hollywood Beauty Salon and psychiatric rehabilitation practitioner, and Darlene Holmes Malone on Newsworks Tonight. You can hear much more of our conversation at newsworks.org. These days, Philadelphia is home to many startups, and most follow a familiar path. A personal passion leads to a one-person business, then growing pains set in. WHYY's Marilyn D'Angelo visits one such homegrown business that's rising to the challenge.
In a storefront bakery just north of Roosevelt Boulevard on 5th Street in Olney, the third shift at Philly Bread is just beginning. At this time of night, the ovens are off, but the prep work is just getting started. In recent months, the company's been growing, and with each day, both bread and employees are in greater demand.
My name is Stephanie Chia. I'm 23, and I've been working here part-time for about a month now, hoping to go full-time.
But there's something drawing them into the artisan bread game. an untraditional career path for city-dwelling millennials.
I think it was an interest in doing something with my hands and creating something and seeing a product from beginning to end. But honestly, I think it's the vision of Philly Bread that really got me committed to this bakery.
2 years ago, Philly Bread was a one-man show. Pete Mertzbacher would bake all night, and during the day, he'd deliver with his bike and bike trailer. He quickly learned how unsustainable his business model was. But his passion for bread and love of baking is what propelled his now thriving Philly bakery forward, despite his initial challenges.
Some children get a guitar in third grade and strum it a little bit, take a couple lessons, and then put it in their closet. And other kids just can't let go of their guitar. Or some kids get a basketball and put it down, and other kids just don't leave the court. I got my hands in the dough with no intention of starting a bakery or being a baker, just with the intention of learning how to make bread, because I'm a curious person and I love food. But I was that guy who got his hands in the dough and just couldn't get it out.
Today, Philly Bread is a 7-day-a-week wholesale business with over a dozen employees. What sets them apart from other bakeries is a step in the process that's always been part of Mertzbacher's vision, one that he couldn't achieve as a one-man show.
Now we have the mill and we're able to put out really great bread 7 days a week at good prices and do it with freshly milled grains.
Mertzbacher and his growing crew now bake for and deliver to about 40 clients, businesses like Weaver's Way, Mariposa, Greens Grow, and Green Isle Grocery, just to name a few, that hold serious weight in the hearts of locavores around the city. And as his client list grows, so does his inner circle. Matt Plax came on at Philly Bread as an apprentice less than a year ago. He offered 1 year to the bakery in exchange for board and pay. Mertzbacher taught Plax everything he knew about the business, but he progressed faster than they both imagined, giving the company skills and energy that it never had before. Plax is now a partner, and the chemistry between the two is a driving force behind the Philly Bread success.
I think we've quickly realized that if there's not something constantly in the oven, like, we're losing out. And as we grow, as the demand for our product grows, and as we're able to keep up with that demand, we're able to keep the oven going all the time. Keep someone there cleaning, keep someone there mixing, keep someone there shaping bread. It's better and better each day.
I love it, and I think I'm good at it, and there's a need out there in Philadelphia, so what better time than now?
Successful businesses don't develop in a vacuum. It's an ever-changing combination of ingredients that lend themselves to a happy and profitable workplace. And as Mertzbacher continues perfecting his recipes, Philly Bread rises to new heights. I'm Marilyn D'Angelo, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Earlier this month, two gunmen were killed by police when they opened fire at an event in Texas where cartoonists had gathered to draw images of the Prophet Muhammad, which many Muslims consider blasphemy. On tomorrow's show, we'll consider the effects of free speech that incites. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.